Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the sixth day of November 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets on a Thursday, as usual, with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. And Channel Seeds' Matt Bennett will join us to take a look at the cash grain side of the marketplace from his farmer perspective. He's in Windsor, Illinois. We'll check out the weather forecast and hear all about green tomatoes from Lisa Brultz on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check out the way the numbers settled up in Chicago for this Thursday. December corn futures up a penny at $3.71 and a quarter. The March at $3.84, up one, and the May futures up a penny at $3.92 and three quarters. July $3.99 and three quarters, a penny and a quarter higher. And next year's December at $4.16 and a half cents, up 2.5 cents for the day. Soy complex bean futures now up 10.5 cents. $10.31 in the November, January at $10.28, 8 and three quarters higher, and March up 8 cents at $10.32 and a quarter. May futures $10.36 and a half, up 7 and a quarter, and July at $10.39 and a half, 6 and a half cents higher. November of 2015 at $10.06 and three quarters of a cent, up 2 and three quarters. Bean meal futures finished at $3.91.70, up $16.40. The bean oil for the day at $32.53 finished 19 cents lower. In the wheat pit nearby soft red at $5.20 and a quarter, down 4 and a half. July, the harvest month at $5.46, down 4 as well. In the Kansas City, July futures at $5.81 for the hard red, down a nickel for the day. Live cattle futures on the day finish the nearby contract that would be the December futures at $165.52 and a half cents, up 32 and a half. February at $166.50, 42 and a half cents higher. And the feeder cattle finished the November at $236.67 and a half, 90 cents higher for 100 pounds. January futures at $230.87 and a half cents, at 67 and a half cents higher. Lean hogs finished December futures at $88.02 and a half cents. It was up 90 cents for the day, and February futures at $87.27 and a half, 52 and a half cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Visit our website at willag.org. Sign up today for our November the 24th Farm Assets Conference. That'll be in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's look in on the outside markets at this hour. Crude oil futures at $78 and a penny a barrel are now down 67 cents for the day. The December heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.45 and 8 cents. That's up 2 cents on the afternoon. And gasoline on the wholesale price at $2.13 even, up 4 and 3 tenths of a cent. Natural gas at $4.40 and 4 tenths of a cent, 21 cents higher. And ethanol futures are currently trading the lead option December at $1.89 and 5 cents. That's up 5 and 4 tenths of a cent for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,484 is up just about 71 points. Gold at around $1,144, $1.75 lower. And the U.S. dollar index at 88.13 is up 0.563 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Cloudy skies, a high of 47. It'll be breezy out there on a northwest wind at 21 to 23, gusting to 33. And then tonight, cloudy, gradually becoming mostly clear, a low of 27 degrees. It'll be cold. Northwest winds at 13 to 18. They'll decrease through the evening to 6-11 after midnight, but still gust as high as 25. And then sunny skies for tomorrow, high of 47. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy and just 37 degrees. And Saturday, cloudy and 47. Looking forward, partly cloudy on Saturday night and 29 degrees. Sunday, sunny skies and 50. Monday, sunny and 55. And on Veterans Day, Tuesday, a chance of rain and partly sunny with a 40-degree high. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
On the phone line here at the closing market report to take a look at what happened in today's agricultural marketplace is Dan Zwicker from CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for taking the time with us. It was a nice green day in Chicago. What happened?
Well, not a lot new. I think to start off, we had a nice reversal to the upside yesterday. The market was unable to build on its losses early in the session, and traders had to come back and buy their short positions back. So we did have a nice reversal. In the overnight trade, we just basically kind of dribbled down a little bit in very quiet consolidation trade. And I think when our export sales came out showing about 59 million bushels of soybeans, that put the spark under soybeans, and then that spilled on over into the corn and wheat market. And a lot of the technical systems are anybody that follows systems are buying the breaks, and I think that's what we saw yesterday. And I think they'll continue to buy the breaks until, you know, the trend lines give way. And right now we got nice little uptrending channels. Today's closes, if we would see some follow through on today's closes, then I think last week's highs are real vulnerable of being taken out, and you take them out and we're going to find a round of short covering that you know, could send descoring up into the 390s and maybe January soybeans up into the 1080s.
That would be a nice little jump. I'm wondering about this $10 bill that's sitting in front of the soybeans. USDA, of course, is due with its crop production and WASDE figures on the 10th of November. That's next week on Monday at 11 a.m. We'll cover it, of course, at willag.org and in the afternoon on a closing market report. But the $10 that shows up in this year's November contract and now again in the November 15 contract with a current carryout of some 450 million bushels seems very much at odds with what many thought would be at least a $9, if not an $8 handle in the front of each of those contracts.
Well, we don't know for sure that carryout's going to be that high. USDA's not done tweaking with the acres yet. And I still question the acreage numbers that they're using. I will question it all the way into January, and then we'll see what happens if they don't do anything about it in January. But I think they're way high on their acres. And some of these yields that are coming in the Western Corn Belt are not as good as what they were on the Eastern Corn Belt. So we may not see much increase in acres. I mean, the market handled the two private crop reports fairly well this week. I mean, we're only down a penny or two in wheat and corn. So, I mean, it very easily end up closing the week higher if we had some follow through here tomorrow. And I guess it's kind of what's new. I mean, the bears been talking about this stuff now for 2 months, and you know, beans have rallied from 904 on the bottom side up to 1050 something on the beans, and you know, 318 on the corn, all the way up to the 381. So and that trend is still in place. Seasonally, though, I think we're tricky. This is a time of year that the market often kind of rolls down and weakens into a late September, early December low. But I think the underlying technical structure of this market puts it in pretty good shape, I think, to maybe go counter-seasonal with that. And I think if we can get through Monday's report without any new bearish numbers, I think that market has a decent shot at rallying right into a kind of a pre-Thanksgiving high point.
It was not supposed to feel this fall like it did last fall when we came in with a short supply. USDA, you suppose, will update their export figures? And would they do that for corn and soybeans, given what the numbers look like so far?
Well, corn, I don't think they really can. I mean, we're running behind last year's pace, and today's numbers were nothing fantastic. I suppose, there would be reason maybe to bubble up the soybean export number since we're running ahead of last year's pace. But, you get awful worried that we're not being front-loaded. They could, ratchet up maybe the soybean exports, but I really don't see that happening in the corn market, at least for right now. I mean, I think this is, I really don't expect much demand changes in either of the reports. I think, we're just going to get a new supply number, and then USDA will, put it somewhere or put it in these stocks. I mean, the big number is in January. I mean, that's when they can subtract everything out from their December 1st stocks number. They almost got to have a stocks number on December 1st before they can really get a handle on this production.
Yeah, so the big number will be in January. What does that tell you about what farmers can or shouldn't do between now and then? Anything?
Well, I mean, the fundamentalists can just scare the hell out of you by all of their numbers,
Because the numbers are scary.
Well, yeah, and I guess anything that's maybe that easy to sell, maybe a guy shouldn't be selling it because I think that's what's happening to this market. It's really easy to get short this thing, but nobody's been making any money on the short side for the last 6 weeks. And markets do climb the wall of worry, and boy, I tell you what, this is a wall of worry when you look at those ending stocks projections. But we've got to get through the South American growing season, and then we've got to get through ours. I think, then maybe all those numbers will be realized, but for right now, they're just basically projections. And I don't, I think we're kind of in a window in here that the market doesn't have to worry too much about what's going to be on hand by September 1st. I think that's going to be more of a worry once we, get further down the road in the marketing year, and if exports begin to fall off, and then it looks like we're going to start getting into the field. Well, then maybe, things could go to the dickens next spring. But, I mean, my cyclical work, I got to be friendly all the way into the winter months. I think this thing has a reasonable, decent shot of strengthening on into the spring, and might even go all the way into June. So there's a lot of fundamental events to take place over the next several months, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if this thing goes a whole lot higher than what everybody thinks it is.
You know what? I'm just getting you wound up a little bit. I want you to hold for a while and stew on that fact. I'll give you a call back about 3 o'clock this afternoon, and we'll record Commodity Week.
Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and, in fact, will be one of our panelists this afternoon on Commodity Week. The others today include a nice series of folks. Amy Sage from The Anderson will be with us, along with Mike Zuzlo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, and Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group. Should be a really good program. I'll try to get it all edited and up on the website at willag.org later this evening, and then of course you can hear it tomorrow on our home station just after the closing market report. That comes up at 2:36, at least a portion of the program, not all of it, as long as we go longer than the 24-minute slot, and Saturday morning on many of these radio stations. One other quick item before we move on in the program. I want to remind you to dial this number, 800-898-1065, or go to willag.org and buy your tickets today for our Farm Assets Conference, the Marriott Hotel in ISU in Normal. Would like to know how many people are coming. We're still a couple weeks out from our November 24th event. But they want to know how many are coming, and we've really sold quite a number of tickets. Still have plenty to go, and we can keep expanding as much as we need to put folks in that room. But if you can do that today, it would be helpful. $25 at 217 or at 800-898-1065. And buy your tickets now for our Farm Assets Conference.
Support for today's broadcast comes in part from the Friends of WILL and from Common Ground Food Co-op in downtown Urbana, with a deli featuring iced lattes made with fairly traded ingredients and local milk, and a salad bar filled with local and organic ingredients. More information is at commonground.coop.
Up next, our regular installment of Backyard Industry from Lisa Brault. You know, the end of the tomato season usually is a sad affair for local eaters. But Lisa Brault discovers the green tomatoes are in disguise. They only look like they're not ready to be eaten.
Much writing exists about the tomato. Written tomato worship peaks in August and September every year as the plants put into the ground in April and May, often under frigid and wet conditions, give forth pounds and pounds of gloriously ripened fruit. Many a friendly neighborhood rivalry has been forged over who has tomatoes first in the summer. My question is, who has tomatoes last in the fall? Seasonal eating, if you do it old school, means using available foods until they're not available anymore because they're gone. They're not growing locally because winter has come. Who can forget Ma Ingalls in Laura Ingalls Wilder's The Long Winter, presenting Pa and the girls with a green pumpkin pie? Using the green tomato is another perfect example of this philosophy. And while fried green tomatoes certainly are not the only delicacies made from unripe tomatoes gathered ahead of the autumn's first killing frost, they are certainly the best known in some quarters. And those whose families consider fried green tomatoes lore and legend via family recipe or otherwise definitely have opinions about how they should be made and with what they should be eaten.
Because if you don't have a hot sauce, then you might as well just leave.
That's Douglas Kistler. A group is gathered in his kitchen. It's the largest room in a very small house, and it doesn't dominate just because of its size. It's where friends come to hang out, sometimes upwards of 20, to make food and get caught up with each other.
Eating is a social experience to me. I don't even like eating alone. I don't like eating by myself.
His gatherings are atypical in that he doesn't have a dining room table. Most of the eating takes place on the porch or on the floor of the living room or just standing around depending on the season, which makes it easier to accommodate those who might run on different schedules.
Nobody I know is punctual. So it's like, if you're informal, you don't have to be on time for anything.
Tonight's menu, fried green tomatoes. While he was born in Texas, Douglas grew up in central Illinois and isn't using a family heirloom recipe. The first time he had fried green tomatoes was on a trip out of state.
I'm thinking it might have been in New Orleans. I used to go to New Orleans a lot. And one of the things that I remember about earliest memories of fried green tomatoes was always with a shrimp on top with remoulade sauce. And so that's how I like to make them now. And I think I obviously must have had that in New Orleans.
The most urgent order of business is to acquire green tomatoes, which is harder than it sounds. You can pick them any time of year. Really, Douglas doesn't believe fried green tomatoes should be solely a food made in the fall out of necessity. But late in the season, depending on the weather, there might not be that many available. Of course, Douglas came through. So what about a recipe? Well, he doesn't cook from a recipe.
Well, one thing that's kind of I like about fried green tomatoes, I think, is that it's just too simple to have a recipe. There's no really need for it. You know, you just throw a couple things together, fry it up. I don't know why you would need a recipe for something like that.
So tomatoes sliced, eggs cracked and beaten. We put together a very basic breading made from flour, cornmeal, salt and pepper, and a couple of dried herbs.
Right, so this is my recipe right here.
We're just dumping. What do you have there, though? How much flour?
I dumped that much in. What do you think? We'll put more in. I got a lot of tomatoes. I don't want to do it again.
A group of friends stood around talking and dredging tomatoes through the flour while Douglas fried them up. He had some advice for newbies.
If you overcook them, then they get kind of soft. No good. But if your oil's hot enough, then they'll start turning like almost to burning before that'll ever happen.
After they cooled, everyone helped themselves to the tomatoes, the remoulade Douglas had made, shrimp, salsa, and avocado. No one sat. Everyone stood, eating the very last of a summer food almost as a defense against a rapidly approaching season filled with snow, root vegetables, and squash. Pass the hot sauce. For Backyard Industry, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks, of course, go to Lisa Braltz for her twice monthly Backyard Industry segments. It is produced by your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Now let's take a look at the cash grain market. On the phone line is Channel Seeds' Matt Bennett from Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What kind of farm work, if any, are you doing today? Anything?
No, a little bit wet out, so we're pretty well, we're done harvesting. Most of our field work, not all, is done, and so we're just kind of waiting to see if we get another chance at a run, a little bit of dry weather maybe.
Do you put anhydrous on in the fall?
Oh, most generally we do. We haven't put any on yet this fall. There's a few going right in here where we're at. Not very many, but it was going on okay here right before the rain, but we decided we would hold off just a little bit longer.
Yeah, so it's a decision about the weather and not about timing or cost for you at this point.
Not really. Was a little bit hesitant, thinking that maybe anhydrous would come down just a little bit. I feel like there's got to be something that gives at some point, given that fertilizer costs are very similar to what they were at this time last year, whereas our fall prices for next fall are about a dollar lower than what they were last year at this time. So I think that something's got to give there at some point.
And it's going to put quite the squeeze on everything at $4.10 or less than that for the crop insurance potential bid. Things will be really tight next year, I would think.
Yeah, obviously the margins were tighter this year than what we had last year, and it's, you know, for a guy that wasn't able to do a whole lot of forward selling or chose not to, if you will, it's a pretty rough year. And so looking forward to next year, I think it's going to be even tougher, and I do think that we're going to have to do a fair amount of purchasing of acres, if you want to call it that, because I think it's going to be really tough to secure the kind of acres that we're going to need you know, so our carryout doesn't get drawn down extensively in 1 year, because I just don't think we're going to do that at $4 corn.
You've got everything harvested. Have you shut the bin doors up tight through January 1st?
Yeah, you know, we had quite a bit of corn sold ahead of time. And the corn that we did not have sold ahead of time, if it's not sold for January yet, as far as the corn goes, we're just going to sit and wait. And, you know, I don't own any beans, so...
How's basis holding up this week, and what are your expectations for the crop production and WASDE figures?
Well, I think on basis, you know, several people right now just a little bit. You know, you see a lot of corn going on the ground, and, you know, here locally we've seen about a nickel to a dime, depending on where you're at. It's often just shade. And I think whenever you look at the WASDE report, I think that you would expect yield on corn maybe to creep up just a hair. I don't really see beans coming up, because I know a lot of the late season sudden death showed up. As far as corn goes, though, I think you could see a little bit of a yield increase, but total crop-wise, I don't know that it will, just simply because I could see maybe acreage coming off just a little bit again.
And Matt, your bids there at Windsor, Illinois, at the elevator.
Yeah, the fall bid's 3.25, and the Jan bid's 3.50. Fall bid on beans is 9.75, and then the Jan bid would be 983.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds. And
Learned Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Learned Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
It's National Nachos Day. In their simplest form, nachos are generally tortilla chips covered in melted cheese. The origin of nachos generally goes to a restaurant called the Victory Club, just across the U.S. border from Eagle Pass, Texas. Wives of several U.S. soldiers were visiting on a shopping trip and stopped by the restaurant after it had closed for the day, and the chef on duty invented a new dish for them with what little he had in the kitchen: tortillas and cheese. On this day in agricultural history in 1923, hyperinflation was running rampant in Europe. A loaf of bread cost 140 billion German marks. In 1976, David Marine died, an American pathologist. His research on the treatment of goiter with iodine led to the iodizing of table salt. Iodized table salt was first sold in the U.S. on May 1st of 1924. In 1986, President Ronald Reagan signed into law the Immigration Reform and Control Act, granting legal residency to most illegal immigrants who had been in the country continuously since January of 1982. And in 1993, the world's largest peanut butter and jelly sandwich was created in Peanut, Pennsylvania. It was almost 40 feet long and used 150 pounds of peanut butter and 50 pounds of jelly. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenora is out of the office today. Here's a quick recap of the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area. This afternoon, a high of 47 degrees under cloudy skies, and then tonight it'll remain cloudy with a low of 27. Sunny skies tomorrow on 47. They'll turn partly sunny on Saturday with a high of 47. And on Sunday, mostly sunny skies with a high of 50 degrees. On Monday, partly sunny and 55. On Veterans Day, that's Tuesday, partly sunny skies and 40 degrees. And on Wednesday of next week, sunny skies with a high of just 36 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast tomorrow during the closing market report. Let's recap some of the winter meetings now. Illinois kicks off the winter meeting season, of course, the week of Thanksgiving, Monday the 24th. That's the brand new Farm Assets Conference to be held at the Marriott in Normal on Illinois State University's campus. The conference there will focus on corn and soybean commodity price outlook with a dozen analysts that appear regularly on the weekly radio program from the U of I called Commodity Week. The conference will feature three U of I ag economists. Bruce Sherrick from the Center for Farmland Research will talk about land prices. Agricultural policy specialist Jonathan Kappas will take up the ARC or PLC decision of the Farm Bill. And crop insurance specialist Gary Schnitke will go through this year's potential payments and next year's insurance options. Sign up for the November 24th Farm Assets Conference online at willag.org. The cost there is just $25 and includes the noon meal and parking. Mid-December will be anchored by two Illinois mainstays. The Department of Crop Sciences Ag Masters Conference is Monday the 15th and Tuesday the 16th. AgMasters is the nation's premier production agriculture how-to event and includes speakers from eight land-grant university systems. It begins with a Monday morning general session, and then those attending will choose eight of 16 available topics to delve deeply Monday afternoon and Tuesday morning. It is especially targeted to farmers wanting to develop corn and soybean production agriculture expertise. Registration for AgMasters is open now. Call the University of Illinois Department of Crop Sciences or search Google for AgMasters Conference. The other mid-December meeting is the Illinois Farm Economics Summit Series. This annual event makes five stops around the state the week of Monday, December the 15th. DeKalb, Peoria, Springfield, Mount Vernon, and Champaign. This year, much of the focus will be on the new Farm Bill, says Gary Schnitke.
Daryl and Scott Irwin will do a look at what prices look like over the next 5 years. Are we in a new era, or what price level should we be looking at? That's important for making farm program decisions, determining whether to go ARC County or PLC, and Daryl and Scott will discuss that. Then after that, we'll go into a discussion of the Farm Bill, laying out the alternatives and what you should be considering when looking at those alternatives. And finally, the day will end with looking at where we should be risk management-wise going forward.
Schnuttke expects the crowds to be big for the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. Space is limited. The fee is $65 online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You've been listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a really good Thursday afternoon.